I'm Patricia Camilleri, Director of the Communications and Alumni Relations Office here at the University of Malta. In this series, called Research Matters, I shall be discussing the many research projects undertaken by the university's academics from all fields of study. I'm very happy to have with me in the studio today for Research Matters quite a little group of people, all women today. I'd like to welcome Angelica Jules from the International and EU office, and she has come to talk to us today about the Erasmus programme, the applications for which will be opening shortly, and she's going to tell us more about that. And she's accompanied by three students who all have different experiences to talk about with regard to their Erasmus experience, Corinne Ketkuti, Teresa Vella and Yvonne Pisani. Welcome to you all. The Erasmus programme, it's one of those acronyms, or it has a nice long name, European Region Action Scheme for the Mobility of University Students. One's never quite sure whether they've actually spent hours dreaming up how they could make Erasmus into a name. But anyway, that's the EU programs for you. This is a student exchange program, which was established in 1987. But I'm sure, Angelica, you can tell us a little bit more about its history, where it's coming from, and how it's developed as well over these last years.
The Erasmus program, it's one of the European programs, and it is it caters both for lecturing staff and student mobility. Lecturing staff, what I mean is a lecturer here at the University of Malta teaches abroad normally for 1 week, and he or she does a minimum of 5 teaching hours. And we have also incoming lecturers, where they teach here at the University of Malta. On the other hand, it is also open for students, both coming from EU member states universities, and also outgoing students. Throughout the years, Erasmus has developed, and there were also quite a number of students who went abroad on Erasmus. The EU is targeting the number for 3 million students.
Gosh, sounds a lot, but probably in the great scheme of things, mm-hmm. it's maybe not that many. I think that I've heard or read that it's not actually very easy to get students to move around.
In Malta, we are trying to encourage students to go abroad. Some students find it difficult because they still live with parents, so they find it difficult to detach from the parents, and even if they have boyfriends. But we try to encourage them to go away.
Yes, and in fact, I mean, we'll be discussing this with the students themselves. The fact that there is this opportunity, perhaps for Maltese students particularly, who live in that comfort zone very often,
exactly.
of family, extended yes, family, exactly. where they're not used to going out of their area,
exactly.
is particularly important, really. Mm-hmm.
And we see the difference when students come back. We see them more mature independently, because, I mean, before in Malta, everything was done by their mother or father. Now when they are living abroad, they have to do everything by themselves, cooking, washing, apart from studying. And
yes.
also having some fun, but the main point is studying.
Of course.
But we see quite a difference in the students who come back. And even we are trying to encourage parents to give this opportunity to their children, because it's a one-lifetime experience. And, I mean, it's really enriching for their children to have this opportunity.
The program itself, what do the students get out of it? And afterwards we'll discuss what they get out of it from the social point of view and this sort of thing. But what do they get out of it as far as their studies are concerned?
Erasmus is divided into two. There is the study element, and then there is also the placement element. Corinne was doing the study bit, and both Yvonne and Therese were doing the placement. Now, what is the difference? When you do a study, you follow lectures abroad, and then you have exams at the end. And those results are then translated into the University of Malta grades. For the placement, students are doing training, and placements are more open for students who are following, for example, nursing, radiography, physiotherapy, communication therapy, occupational therapy, where they have training, where they get training at hospitals, clinics, and even, I mean, other areas like social work, where they get training. Mm-hmm. And they don't do any exams, they just receive training.
Mm-hmm. And these placements, I mean, the students obviously can come to you and say, I would like to do mm-hmm. this or that or the other, but there are certain sort of rules about what they can do, I presume. They
exactly.
have to, it has to be an agreement with
exactly.
their lecturers.
Yes, before the students go abroad, they sign what we call, as regards studies, learning agreement, as regards placements, training agreement. In this learning agreement, the students decide together with their head of department what credits they can take abroad. And they list all these credits in their learning agreement. Then this learning agreement is signed by the head of the department, faculty officer, and us. And then this agreement is sent abroad, and it is also signed by the departmental and institutional coordinator abroad, so that it is the credits,
thing.
Yes, mm-hmm. it's, they are accepted by both parties. The training agreement, it is different from the learning agreement. They don't list any credits because they don't have any credits abroad, but they list down what training they are going to receive.
The learning
objective. The objectives, etc. And then it is signed by the coordinator here, the university, by the student, and also from the coordinator abroad. So those are important binding documents. I mean, as regards the learning agreement, there are these credits, and the students have to follow these credits. And when they come back, these credits are recognized here. Instead of doing them here at the University of Malta, they do them abroad.
They will go on their transcript as though they were credits
yes, exactly.
they've done in Malta.
And even in their transcript, we'll list down also the name of the university so that it is recognized.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know that one of the reasons why there is such a tight contract over this is there have been in the past, you know, at the beginning perhaps, some misunderstandings about what was going to be achieved by the students. And the students themselves have the responsibility, I suppose, to look up on the website on the university of their choice to see whether there are credits which are appropriate.
Exactly. Exactly. Before, I mean, when they apply, the students have to list down three universities. And, I mean, they don't just try them to fill in the space, but they have to go inside the website and see what credits they offer. And then they discuss these credits with the head of department. It is very important. And then the head of department decides which credits are suitable for the students, because not all credits are suitable. And they try to match with those credits that they are going to do here. So.
But then when they come to do the exams here, there will be one paper for everybody.
Even
it doesn't matter whether they've been to Erasmus in Timbuktu or uh-huh. in wherever.
Uh-huh.
They will be doing so. So
the lecturers have to
bear that in mind, I suppose,
uh-huh, uh-huh.
when they are setting up the,
exactly.
the credits. The countries that the students go to, probably all European countries have these university opportunities, but which countries are most attractive to our own students?
Yes, before a student and even a lecturer goes abroad, there should be a bilateral Erasmus bilateral agreement. Without this agreement, the students can't go abroad. And these agreements are with all EU countries. And it is signed by both the coordinator abroad and our director at the international office. So there should be a bilateral agreement before going abroad with all EU countries.
Mm-hmm. And clearly there is a language issue.
Exactly.
I mean, if you're going to Glasgow, as the students in the studio did, that's obviously not going to be a problem.
Yes, when the students are choosing the universities, they have to be really careful, because tuition in Italy, France, Germany, Austria, and sometimes Belgium, they offer courses in their own language, and even exams. So when students choose those country, I mean, they have to
have to have a good working knowledge.
Exactly, exactly. So when choosing, not only for the credits, but also as regards the language.
Absolutely. Well, at this point, talking of language, perhaps we can bring in Corinne, who went to Belgium, to Brussels, I believe, interpreting and translating. And clearly you had to do things in French.
Yes, it was all French, because they are Flemish and French, but in Brussels they speak mostly in French, so all lessons were in French, and even the exams. Mine was research, so I didn't have exams, but they do everything in French.
So what was your experience when you got there from the academic point of view? Did you sort of find the opportunities were easy to access, things like the library? What was the attitude of the university when you were there? Did you find it positive?
Well, the first week was a little bit difficult because I had to find a lodging, and it wasn't easy because there were some schools who offered boarding, but my university did not offer, so it was quite hard. And they offered this paper to all students, and everybody had to try to find a place from this paper, so that's why it was more hard. But then when I found a lodging, the staff, they were helpful, and even the teachers. It was then I got used to the system and the transport, and
You managed to, still just talking about the academic side of it, did you manage to achieve your goals as far as your research was concerned?
Yes, I was quite satisfied with the way that, for example, I went to talk to some professors regarding my experiments and my research, and they were very helpful. The library, even like the research was a little bit different from our system in Malta, so it was quite hard at the beginning, but again, until you get used to it, everything is difficult, but then, I mean, everything is fine.
Put it in. Yes. And I think your experience going to Brussels on your own, which is was perhaps different to the experience that your student colleagues here had. An important experience, as we were saying with Angelica before, the idea that when you go abroad, you're going to have to do things for yourself. How did you cope with that? Was that something you were used to doing, or did you find that it was a steep learning curve?
Well, before going, it was not, I mean, I wanted to go, and that was my aim. I didn't have any problems if I was going alone or if there was going to be someone else. Well, if there is going to be someone else, then it would have been better. But my aim was going, so then when I was there, there were some times that I missed people back home.
You feel lonely.
I wanted to be with someone. But then I made friends, and it was all better. And I mean, even when you're with people whom you know from, for example, in your country, it's a little bit harder to make friends, because you get together with your friend and perhaps
you don't have the motivation.
Yes, to get
you have
to know
other
new people.
People with you. And one of the things I found when I lived abroad on my own was that, again, the motivation to go out and do things. Because otherwise, you're at home and there isn't probably anyone to chat to, unless you happen to have made a friend with another student or whatever. The idea that the weekend was coming up, and I used to sit down and say, now, how am I going to go through this weekend in the most productive way? And you start looking at things that would interest you. Obviously, I was particularly interested in going to museums and art galleries, but obviously that's not everybody's choice. What did you manage to do when you were in Brussels on the weekend, when you weren't in the library?
Well, I like to visit museums like you do, but I contacted some friends, and, well, not all replied, but whoever replied, I made sure that we kept in contact so that we do this often as possible, so that it's just not going for just for one time. It's something regular. So I used to meet up with some friends, and every Sunday we used to go out of Brussels with the train, and so that it was regular. It's not just one time and then everything is forgotten.
Mm. Yes, that's what I found. That was really very much my experience, that I had to be systematic and I had to sort of sort things out in a long-term basis. And I found that really worked. So Yvonne and Teresa, tell us about your experience in Glasgow. Teresa.
Well, I mean, we went to Glasgow, it was in the summer. We went for 3 months, from June till September. And we were there, and I mean, it was a good experience. It was Glasgow itself, it's a kind of a young city, so we fit it in quite well. And the placement itself, I mean, we were based in two different fields, so it was a different experience for each of us. But it was, I mean, it was challenging, definitely. However, it was something which we both learned from. And
seeing different people working in your area. I mean, you could have a placement here in your social work.
Yes.
Here you could have a placement here, but having it abroad, I presume you see a different system,
definitely.
Different approaches.
Definitely, it was different, and it took a while to get used to it as well. You need to really kind of keep yourself alert at how they are doing things and keep asking, how do you do this? You can't rely on the way things are done in Malta, because that may be the wrong system. So you have to keep on asking. Am I doing it right? How do I do it? And you just need to make sure that you keep yourself informed.
So, was that your experience as well?
It was, and I was in a disability field. It was different, but they were very accommodating to what the University of Malta wanted in terms of grading and the learning objective. So even though the University of Strathclyde had a different system, because that's who we were with, they totally went with the University of Malta, so they were really helpful and they really taught me what I needed to know.
So when you came back, you felt that the learning objectives had been achieved and that it was worth it from the academic point of view.
It was definitely worth it, because now when I write on my CV, I have some experience from abroad, and that will go a long way. So, and I learned so much of what I wouldn't have learned in Malta, because they have a different law and they work differently. Their social services are different. But now I have two perspectives. I have the Maltese perspective and I have the Scottish one. So,
of course, it's all about broadening one's horizons. And what about the social aspect in Glasgow? As you say, it's a young city. Glasgow is not the Glasgow of my youth. It's been cultural capital of Europe, I believe, and has wonderful, wonderful art galleries.
Yes.
Always going back to the art galleries. Did you find things to entertain you in that area?
Yes, it was definitely. I mean, you do need to kind of look up on the internet to see where you can go. So, there were a lot of art galleries that we did visit, and there are a lot of tours just around. I mean, it's all very accessible. So, I mean, even if you haven't planned anything, you can just go around the central part of Glasgow, and there's a lot to see.
Just sort of hang out and...
Yeah, and shop and...
It's always fun.
Yeah.
It's always fun, absolutely. And you as well felt that you got both things from your experience. You got the academic side and the experience in your work side, but also you brought back with you something that was a Scottish experience,
yes,
as well.
Yes.
Because that's quite a unique culture in its own way.
Yes, definitely. I mean, it was. I was based in a substance abuse sector, and I hadn't done any work related to that field in Malta. However, when I went to Glasgow, I had to get used to the way that they were done in Glasgow, and the law had a big influence on how things would be done. So you did you did need to kind of fill yourself in on how the law was. And and even sort of resources, they are different to how they are from Malta. So I was aware of certain resources in Malta, but then there were substantially more in Glasgow. So I mean, you are aware, you kind of build an opinion of what things can be done in Malta as well to improve the situation as well.
Yes, that's a very positive outcome, definitely. Angelica, Corinne brought up the problem of accommodation, and I know that this has come up sometimes in the press. Accommodation is very often offered in halls of residence, and I know that you prefer that they do that.
Yes.
And go,
I mean,
to them.
Some universities offer accommodation on campus, they have university residence, but others do not offer. So the students have to find private accommodation, and especially in cities like Rome, London, it is very expensive. It is around 500 euros, 400 to 500 euros a month. So if a group of students are going abroad, I mean, it's better to share. I mean, expenses are shared. But if, for example, like Corinne, she went abroad, we encourage students to take up when it is on offer universities' residence. So, but if they find then difficulty in finding accommodation, and we had already some students who went there before, we give the contacts of the students going abroad to past students, and they try to communicate between them so that they help her or him to find the appropriate accommodation. But it's up to the students to stay at the residence or find private accommodation.
Yes, it's a choice. It's one of the choices that they make as part of their going abroad experience.
Yes, exactly.
Absolutely, because they may well feel that they don't want to be in residence, but then they have
to share with other people.
To share with other people. But then obviously that's a decision that they have to cope with.
Exactly.
Then,
and also to pay.
and to pay as well. The students that are eligible to go on these mobility.
Practically all students, undergraduate, postgraduate, and doctoral level students can apply for Erasmus, that is full-time and part-time students. Also, full-time students who are studying here at the University of Malta, coming from EU member states, can apply. For example, a student is coming from Germany. He can apply for Erasmus and go to Italy, not to Germany. He can't go back to the home country. And first-year students can't go on Erasmus because students have to apply a year before. And the year before, they are not a student.
Not the university. Yeah.
And so first-year students apply to go in their second year. And also final-year students can't go on Erasmus because of their final thesis, etc. So practically all students can apply, and the minimum period is 3 months, and the maximum period is 12 months, 1 year. They can spend 1 year abroad. Normally, students go for either first semester or second semester, but over the years, we had quite some students who went for a whole academic year, because the faculty encouraged that it's better to go for one full year than spending only one semester abroad.
We should also say that it has been a learning curve also for university academics as well.
Exactly.
I think at the beginning, at least, it was a little bit difficult for them to grasp.
Until they got used to the idea.
But
nowadays, lecturers are really encouraging the students to go abroad.
I can imagine things have changed. But again, when you have something new that comes in, it's always going to be a bit difficult at the beginning. Mm-hmm. And they select preferences of universities. So obviously, they're not necessarily going to be able to go to the one that they wanted.
No, because I mean, the students list 3 universities. Now, students are chosen on their academic performance. So if, for example, Università degli Studi di Roma Tre in Italy, there are only 2 placements and 5 students applied. We place students according to academic performance. So if 5 students applied for this university, we choose the first 2. And then the other 3 students, we try to place them according to their second preference. And then if also their second preference is taken up, we go to their third preference. So it is important that the students don't just list three universities, but to be really careful.
Yes, because obviously there will be some which offer more places than,
exactly,
than others.
Exactly.
Than others. Which are the most popular countries to go to? I suppose Italy. I suppose
Italy, UK, and Ireland, mainly because of the language. And even a lot of law students go to Italy because our law is similar to the Italian law, so they find it more easy to study and even conduct research. Nowadays, even France and Spain, the number is increasing, so we are trying to promote all countries, but it is automatically that students choose Italy, UK, and
it's only natural, but now we have a new
and even we have
Spanish,
increased bilateral agreements with different universities. We have around 450 agreements, so...
We have Department of German, we have Department of Spanish, probably have more students who would be physically able to, from the sense of, from the point of view of the language.
And even Scandinavian countries, because Scandinavian countries teach in English, so they choose also those countries.
I see. The nitty-gritty of application, what should the students do if they're listening to this program, or their parents perhaps are listening, what should they do to apply?
Okay. By the end of January, we will update our website with all the placement in the application form will be updated. Then in February, we will issue the call. The dates are from the 8th till the 26th of February. So 26th is the deadline. We will not accept any late applications. Then the following week, we will send all applications to the faculties for assessment. And afterwards, when we receive the assessment from the faculties, the Erasmus committee meets up. And then we start nominating students abroad. This procedure will take up till around April. And then we start nominating them abroad. And when we receive the go-ahead from abroad, we contact the students, and then they start filling the necessary documents, like application form, accommodation form, and learning agreements and other documents.
And just a quick word before we finish about the payments. I think that's an important thing that we should mention.
Yes,
that they
exactly. We give
80%
the students
up front and then 20% exactly. when they come back and do the paperwork.
We give the students a grant. I mean, it does not cover all the expenses, because usually students have flight expenses, accommodation expenses, and daily living, like food, trains, buses, etc. So this grant does not cover all the expenses, but it helps.
A large part.
Exactly. We give 80% at the beginning and 20% after they submit all the documents.
Well, I'm afraid we've come to the end of our time. Thank you very, very much to the students, Corinne, Yvonne and Teresa, and of course to Angelica. Just as a PS, Angelica?
If students want to contact us, they can call us on 2340-2804 or come to our office to room 106 Administration Building at the University of Malta. And the deadline is 26th February.
Great. Thank you very much. And all students who go on Erasmus, I hope you have an absolutely fantastic time. Thank you. I do hope you can join us again next week for another edition of Research Matters. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye.